Thanks for joining us on KCChiefs.com. I'm Josh Looney, and you're watching the first installment of Camping with the Chiefs.
Josh Looney with you on KCChiefs.com, where we found the first guy to wear the new Chiefs Nike uniform. It's wide receiver Dwayne Bowe.
Two, spring Jamaal Charles early. Confidence breeds success when it comes to young football players. This is Jamal's first chance to be a primary ball carrier. We're very honored to have NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell join us. He's in town to witness the game that never was between the Dallas Texans and the Dallas Cowboys. Commissioner, thanks for joining us today.
It's great to be here.
What's it again? Josh Looney alongside Bob Costas. It's NBC's Football Night in America visits Arrowhead Stadium for the first time in the show's history. It's time to officially usher in, where's my football? We're at the 101 banquet with celebrity guest John Amos. You might remember him from Coming to America, the Mary Tyler Moore Show. But what brings you back to Kansas City tonight?
My love for the Chiefs.
Chief GM Scott Pioli joins us following the first night of the 2012 NFL Draft.
Welcome to the 2012 Senior Bowl in Mobile, Alabama. Josh Looney alongside Chiefs head coach Romeo Crennel. And thanks for joining us on KCChiefs.com. I'm on my way to Indianapolis and the NCAA, and Mitch, you've been a big part of this show and really a big part of my career as I've gone from a guy with no camera experience to a PR slappy to in broadcast media. So thank you, and of course thanks to all the 65 TPT guys out there as well.
I just remember the day when they said, because you had been in PR, like in PR intern guy, and I knew you were a linebacker at Washburn, and they go, he's going to be like the insider online guy. I go, Looney is? You've been awesome. So congratulations to you. And I'm excited to see what's going to happen with the NCAA and rebranding Division II. That's going to be kind of fun. Yeah. I mean, you're walking into a brand new job, brand new thing. But with all of the avenues now that are available to market D2, and people need to realize how good Division II is in NCAA, it's going to be kind of fun. So
obviously
fun
I have to follow D2 you. Ties, and I've been telling everybody, you know, I've had a blast doing stuff with the Chiefs. The media stuff just kind of happened. It was never a career goal of mine. And now I go from a job that's just fun, talking about football, to a grown-up job. Yeah, put on the tie and all that good stuff. So it's bittersweet, excited for the future. Obviously sad to leave the great people I've met with the Chiefs organization. Well, there's a game to play. So let's talk football.
Falcons. And this is your team, so that's why it makes it a little tough.
Yeah, I grew up in Kansas City. Yeah. It's a team I grew up cheering for, rooting for, so obviously passionate about the Chiefs. The Chiefs aren't going anywhere, man. I'm going to be flying my flag high in Indianapolis. And seriously, I'll be keeping my Twitter account, so hit me up on Twitter if you're an Indy. I need a place to watch the games. And I'm serious. I need some fans to watch this with, so I'll be wearing my red each Sunday.
Just check Joe Dane and all the Chiefs Kingdom guys because they got all the database of where all those places are around the country. And so you can't eat at San Elmo's every night. So I don't know what you guys are going to do.
That's the combine, combine tradition. All right, so Chiefs and Falcons starting off the regular season. Mitch, let's first get to how we got here. We spent so much time over training camp in the preseason talking about possible cuts and the things about the roster. And we finally at least know what this roster, at least the first edition, is going to look like. The cuts were announced on Friday night and then the practice squad unveiled on Saturday. The Chiefs down to 54. Tom Bahali on this roster doesn't count towards the active roster, which I had wrong in last week's show. I thought he did count towards the active roster. The Chiefs roster, 54 players, and then they'll have to make another move when Tama gets activated next week to get down to 53. Not a lot of surprises to be mentioned. Just four players who were on the 53-man roster at one point last year. Only two of them played. Donald Washington released. Amon Gordon there, probably the biggest name to me, released, biggest contributor last year. Wish Amon well, one of my favorite guys in this locker room. Great story of him bringing back his career. As I mentioned, Donald Washington was released. And then you had David Mims, who was a practice squad call-up late last year, and Brandon Bear, who made the team as a rookie free agent, undrafted last year, did not play in any games, was inactive for all 16 games. So those are your four biggest names on this cut list, guys that actually have 53-man roster experience.
In the case of these guys, no doesn't mean no. It just means not right now. And we mentioned that this 53-man roster is one that's going to be somewhat fluid. When Tomba, it starts with Tomba coming back, or even prior to that, because it could even change prior to Sunday's game against Atlanta. But even with Tomba coming back, somebody's going to have to come off that list. So it's not, as I mentioned, it's not chiseled in stone and brought down by Moses from Mount Sinai. This thing could be cut and pasted just a little bit. To me, the most noteworthy thing about the 53-man roster is the fact, and we anticipated this, it wasn't a surprise, to have four tight ends, no fullbacks, and five running backs. That's odd. I mean, that's an odd way to set it up. So, but we also saw Jake O'Connell used as a fullback. Maniri can be back there. The other thing that's interesting on looking at the offensive side is only 7 offensive linemen. But we kind of got a hint that that was coming when Ryan Lilt just started to rep at center. Yeah, what's he doing there? But with 7 offensive linemen, at least to start the season, or at least right now, it allowed them to have 7 defensive linemen, 9 linebackers, and then a full complement of defensive backs.
Oh, yeah, I look at, the 4 tight ends, the no fullbacks, 5 running backs. There's still, it's kind of the right now. You look at 2 of the undrafted rookies that made this roster. When I talk to Tyson Arm, we'll get to what he had to say later in the show. But both of those guys, I mean, there's some injury situations there. Hartman at safety, the undrafted rookie. You have Lewis that's injured right now. When Lewis gets back to full speed, you wonder what they do there. Same thing with Cyrus Gray at running back. You have 5 running backs on this roster. Nate Eaches makes it undrafted. When Gray's ready with that hamstring, you wonder what they do at that position. And we can even go to outside linebacker. They keep 5 outside linebackers, including Tom Bahale. We mentioned he becomes active next week. Is it going to be Andy Studebaker, Edgar Jones, or Cameron Sheffield that goes away, or is it going to be someone else in this roster? So there's actually still a little bit of training camp competition going on, if you will. And you mentioned just kind of the first addition. In fact, Junior Hemingway kind of got caught in the numbers game this weekend. He doesn't make the roster, had some injury issues during the preseason, so he goes to practice squad, and then he's released from the practice squad before Monday's practice, basically because of practice body numbers. Romeo Crennel explained the decision to release 7th-round draft pick Junior Hemingway yesterday. Let's take a look.
We got the roster down to 53, and we added 8 guys on the practice squad, and as it turns out, we made a move on the practice squad. Junior Hemingway, we released him from the practice squad this morning and added Wranglin. I think as we were looking at it, we were a little heavy at the wide receiver spot, and so we made that move so that we could add an offensive lineman, make it a little bit easier at practice so we can operate practice more efficiently, and so we did that.
I had quite a reaction on Twitter, Mitch, from fans. Hemingway, already given up on him. I think he probably comes back at some point.
Sure does.
Wranglin, the 2011 AFL Offensive Lineman of the Year. Good story. You need more bodies this week on the line.
That's your scout team offensive line.
Right.
That's who your defense is working with, and you never have less than 5 offensive linemen. So you have to have 5. That means you've got Stevenson, Allen, Patterson, Wranglin, and Mims. If you don't have one of those guys, you've only got 4 offensive linemen. You don't want to use a starter on the scout team, or you don't really want to use Maniri to come over. You'd like to keep him healthy because he's going to be a big part of this team, I think. And so you don't want to use O'Connell and put a 70 number on him out there. So honestly, you don't want to use a defensive lineman. Who's going to come over? You're going to have Rapati come over and play right tackle or guard. So it's just a matter there of being practical and having 5 offensive linemen on your scout team.
Yeah, people ask me, well, then why not Newsom? Why not Bellamy? Remember, Junior had this groin he's just kind of coming back from. You're talking about looks. Newsom, first off, is a great receiver to play the Roddy White, play Julio Jones, a big-bodied guy who can go up and get balls. In fact, he was one of the more notable cuts that kind of flew under the radar, in my opinion. We knew that he probably wasn't going to make the roster because the numbers crunch at receiver, but had a great training camp. The Chiefs like Jamar Newsom. So you need him on looks. Josh Bellamy, speedster guy, he's a good guy to give you looks, and he's also a guy who's going to run around on special teams. So from a practice squad perspective, you needed that extra offensive lineman. I don't think it's anything on Junior. I expect Junior to come back at some point. He had the groin. It's all about looks this time of year, and that's why practice squad shuffle.
Well, and I think the practice squad, the 53, and the active 45-man roster every week is going to be opponent-specific.
I agree.
The way that this roster is set up, I tweeted out, and you can follow me at Mitch Holtis, and one of my biggest regrets, or I'm shattered that I never caught you in Twitter followers. I got to about 2,000, and then it can get any closer. So if you follow Josh and want to come follow me, now that he's gone,
I lost
NCAA,
like 100 followers after I announced that I was gone. But then
come on over.
But then
some
of them came back. It's like, oh, he's still another week, so I need to refollow and leave.
Just come on over. That's okay, buddy. It's like giving your voters, giving the Electoral College to me. All right, honestly, but I tweeted out that the fact that you can have 5 running backs and 4 tight ends is the fact that those guys can all multitask. It was the focus of finding the 53 almost every day during my time in St. Joe when I was trying to point that out, because Maniri can catch it, he can block it, he can play fullback from tight end. O'Connell can play tight end. Of course, he can play special teams. And those running backs can all kind of multitask. They're not just, take a look at, with Peyton, he's not just a plow horse. He can catch the ball. So the fact that they've got multi-skills allows the Chiefs to be able to do this, because it's not like any of these nine guys are pigeonholed in any one thing.
The Chiefs are able to practice. What about the guys who are going to be able to play, though, Mitch? They started practice for Labor Day with five defensive starters, five in question yesterday. Guys who did not practice, Tom Bahaly, obviously he's out for this game. We know that. But there's a Pro Bowler. Your other Pro Bowl on the defense last year, Derek Johnson, did not practice with an ankle injury. Anthony Terribio, your starting nose tackle, did not practice with an ankle injury. Brandon Flowers, limited yesterday with a foot injury. I guess that's encouraging because he hasn't really done much for several weeks. And then Kendrick Lewis did not practice with a shoulder injury. So five defensive starters in question. And we'll start. Let's start with the one we know is going to be out in Tom Bahaly and how the Chiefs are going to address his absence. I think it's going to be a group effort. Obviously, Justin Houston's going to need to step up. I think you'll see Andy Studebaker in a lot of base snaps. But Edgar Jones is a guy who really came on as preseason went. They like his pass rush ability. He was a special teams kind of stalwart throughout his career. 5 years in Baltimore, not much on the defensive end as far as statistics. A big special teams guy. And then, of course, you have Cameron Sheffield, who, outside of Houston, may be the best pass rusher of that group. I think it's mix and match. We talk about game-specific plans. I think you're going to see different formations, different sets with Studebaker, Sheffield, and Edgar Jones all playing opposite Justin Houston on Sunday.
Yeah, Atlanta's going to be ready to see everything. And I don't think we're giving away any trade secrets to know that Matt Ryan's going to get a lot of different looks. But Studebaker's is going to, we see him at the high point of his career making the sack against Buffalo, or the game he had against Pittsburgh when he had the interception return, he had the touchdown in the end zone. He's capable of making big plays. I'm also interested in seeing Cam Sheffield. Mm-hmm. Cameron Sheffield was really good at times in the preseason. He was really good in that Arizona game. He can cover, he can come after the passer, and we've seen Edgar Jones get better week by week by week since he was signed to this roster. So, yes, you've got to put them all together. And let's be honest now, if we're talking opponent-specific, Atlanta's offensive line struggled last year. They've got a ton of offensive weapons at the skill position, but the offensive line, they felt mystified with. In fact, they made big changes. They changed their offensive coordinator. They would like to get the ball downfield more with Matt Ryan and with Roddy White and Julio Jones and Gonzalez and Harry Douglas, who's the one guy that's kind of lost in this as a slot receiver. But to do that, you've got to be able to protect. And last year, they didn't give up a ton of sacks, but they struggled on third down. They were one of the worst third down teams in the National Football League last year, the worst playoff team on third down last year because they had protection issues. And so they think that they've got them fixed. We'll see. And the Chiefs, I think, are going to put a bunch of different things at them, personnel-wise and scheme-wise, as you mentioned, to make things a challenge for Matt Ryan.
Well, aside from Tom Bahaly's absence and affecting the pass rush game, your best tacklers in question with Derek Johnson. Two starters on the back end are in question in Flowers and Lewis. So you're looking at coverage and you're looking at pass rush. And Derek Johnson is probably the best pass rushing inside linebacker the Chiefs have, although most of that pressure is going to come from the outside, even in Holly's absence, in the 3-4 defense and the way things are created. So Romeo Crennel talked about that, battling the injuries, how you're going to be able to replace Tom Bahaly, how the pass rush and the coverage work hand-in-hand. And long story short, guys are going to have to step up this week, and here's what Romeo Crennel said yesterday on those topics.
With Tomba not being able to play this week and the injury uncertainty you have at a lot of positions on defense, I mean, you feel like you're ready to play a game against an opponent of this caliber?
Well, hey, you know, you'd like to have all your guys all the time. But in this business, you don't have all of them all the time, and so you have to depend on other guys to step up and do their part when they're called on. And so particularly at the outside linebacker position, that's what has to happen. So we'll have to rotate guys in there, and we will during the course of the week. And I expect all of them to step up and to be able to produce. Now, are they going to produce the way Tomba produces? You know, only time will tell that. But they're not going to cancel a game. And we have to play, and we will play, and I think that those guys will represent themselves very well.
With regard to Tomba, you talked about the production that you may or may not get when he's not in there, but are there intangibles with when he's not out there that you guys miss, you know, that relentless effort maybe that he's always given?
Well, I think that other guys have to step up, and they have to be relentless. Like Eric Berry, he's going to be relentless, you know, with or without Tomba, you know. And I think other guys will have to play the same way. You know, Tyson Jackson, he plays his game. Dorsey will play his game. You know, it's the young guys that you don't know exactly what you're going to get, you know, from this scenario.
How instruction, the coverage, they go so hand-in-hand. Well, what's the bigger challenge, replacing a guy like Tomba, generating that coverage or the pass rush, or getting guys in coverage that are going to be your reserves behind Flowers or Lewis?
Well, like you said, it goes hand-in-hand. And the better pressure that you can get on the quarterback, the better chance that the coverage can do a good job. And now when you talk about pressure on the quarterback, that's not sacks all the time, you know. If you can get the guy off the spot and destroy the timing, if you can knock a ball down, you know, and those things like that, or if you can just collapse the pocket and make the quarterback feel the pocket closing in on him, you know, now he gets the ball out maybe quicker than he wanted to. And all of those things impact the quarterback.
So as far as judging whether you're getting pressure, completion percentage, the opposing quarterback is a key stat for you looking at it.
Well, that and then where the balls are going, you know. You can have a good completion percentage, but if he throws two touchdown passes, you can still lose the game, you know, on big plays. So, you know, the final outcome is the score. That's the final deal. And then you can look at the other components and see how you did there. But if we can hold the score down, all right, and not let them score touchdowns and force field goal attempts, then we're going to have the best chance.
It was quite the challenge the Chiefs faced defensively in this game, Mitch. Talked to Derek Johnson and Brandon Flowers yesterday. They're doing what they should. They've got the poker face on. If I'm out there, you know I'm 100%. I'm trying to get to 100%. Both acknowledge they are still injured, but did not rule themselves out for Sunday's game, which is what you want to see. At least don't tip your hand to Atlanta and that offense this early on what's going to happen.
But on their worst days, they're a straight or a flush. On their best days, they're four of a kind. And the question, you know, I'll be stunned if both these guys aren't ready to go because they're both warriors. In the case of Derek Johnson, I mean, they're both explosive players. I mean, we've seen Brandon Flowers change games. This essentially won that Cleveland game on the road in 2010. And then he was able last year, of course, to pull off his games or pull off his game against Oakland with the pick six to the black hole. But they're both explosive players. And against an explosive offense, it's good to try to create turnovers. I mean, Atlanta was very good last year in the giveaway takeaway. But if they're holding poker hands, if I'm betting on the side bet, I'm still going to bet on these guys to be out there and compete. In the case of Brandon, the big question is, and the time I was going to tell you, the big time, is 10:31 a.m. when the inactives come out.
That's right.
And people are going to be sitting there waiting with bated breath, like who's on this list and who's not. But the fact that Brandon Flowers has gone since essentially July the 30th. We say July 31, but he came out early in that practice. Mm-hmm. That was in the first 30 minutes or so of that night practice at Spratt Stadium. But that is one of the guys on this team I won't count out, or DJ. Yeah, it's been a month.
It's been a month.
But if there's anybody that can pull it off, it's that cat.
Yeah, I agree. And you, people on Twitter especially have been, what's the status, injury status? When do you think we'll find out? You're right, 10:31 a.m. There's no reason to say out. I mean, these guys are trying to get back. So you're within the league's guidelines. They're both probably going to go in as questionable, I would imagine, to this weekend. Mm-hmm. And we'll find out about 89 minutes before kickoff when the inactives come out, if these guys are going to be in the lineup or they're not. And that's what's great about the NFL, that both these guys are truly questionable for this game. And we'll find out what with Lewis and Tribio as the week goes on as well. But specific to Flowers and Johnson, the two biggies on that list, I think we'll both see questionable statuses heading into Sunday.
But what we got to understand is with Flowers and Johnson, they are both warriors. Now, we see prominent guys in this league. Sometimes maybe the lesser injured guy, I can't go. If these two guys have a fault, it's I'm going. Mm-hmm. And so, and again with Brandon Flowers, I don't know this for sure, but it might have been he tried to come back too soon.
He did. He was in full pads. He tried to come back for the joint practice on August 7th
against
the Arizona Cardinals.
Full
pads, came out there, went through some individual drills, and then about 20 minutes later was back on the bikes. It's the last time we saw him in full pads. And yeah, I think he tried to push it back a little early, and then who can blame him? He's a competitor. He saw Larry Fitzgerald on the other sidelines, and
let's
I want to get out there.
Yeah, and he wants to be out there against these Atlanta receivers who are outstanding, as we mentioned. So I'm not going to bet against those two guys.
Now here's what Derek Johnson and Brandon Flowers said themselves about their injury situation heading into Sunday.
It is what it is. You know, nobody likes being away from the game, you know, when you're passionate about the sport. But you got to deal with things as they come. I'm looking forward to getting back out there now with my team and just going from there.
When you first got hurt, did you imagine at that time you'd miss the whole preseason?
You can never predict injuries. You know, I definitely want to get it back out there soon and during the preseason, but I didn't. So just get ready for the regular season.
Is this an error on the side of caution injury, you think, more than anything?
I mean, I don't want to get it too much into injuries. You know, the training staff will know what's going on. You can ask them. They'll let you know what was cautionary and everything about that. But like I said, if I'm ready to go on Sunday, I'll be out there.
You know, that's the plan. That's the plan to get back on Sunday. I mean, I'm a ball player, so it's going to be hard to sit this one out. So, like I said, if I can see progress every day and if I suit up, you know, on Sunday, that means I'm ready to go.
Well, let's start with Flowers, Mitch, because it's even bigger issues if he can't go, because Jaleel Brown limited yesterday with a groin injury. He started the three preseason games, first three in Flowers' absence, hurt his groin against Seattle in game three, and did not play in the preseason finale. He had been a standout in OTAs and really early in camp as a nickel dime kind of in the paint player and sub package, and they tried him outside up and down preseason, not as good on the outside corner as he was in some of the sub package roles for Jaleel, but you could tell he was improving as time went on and getting used to that. Well, he gets hurt in the third preseason game, so they put in Jock Reeves, who really is probably going to be your number three guy and is in line to start if Flowers or Brown can't go. Jock Reeves is shaking off some rust, which we've seen in the preseason. Hasn't played in the game since 2009. Interesting backstory. We talked about it last week on the show. Not really because of any reason. He was in the prime of his career, 16-game starter in 08, a starter in 09, and then took 2 years off to care for a sick mother who unfortunately passed away on the same day the Chiefs opened training camp this year, which is why he missed the first week of camp. So Jock Reeves, right now, if both of those guys are out, he's in line to start this game, and the Chiefs need a veteran to step up and kind of shake off the rust if that's the case.
They do, but let's go back to the Tom Bahali answer and the fact that there are different variables there. I'll be shocked if Romeo just puts one guy out there on a rubber raft in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean and says, go get it. Here comes Hurricane Isaac. I think that they'll do a bunch of different things. I don't think there's any one answer there. If Jaleel's can go and he's out there, hey, just buddy, you got it all day. You're at left corner. Or Jock, you've got it. You haven't played since 09. Boom, go get him. I think there'll be different things they can. Travis Daniels enters this picture. Yep. They can do different things scheme-wise and personnel-wise. So, again, Matt Ryan's going to see different looks at all three levels of this defense, not only in scheme but in personnel. If the injury factor dictates such.
Yeah, Travis Daniels could enter the picture. He's been cornerback throughout his career. The Chiefs keep Hartman. That's an interesting keep on this roster, even in Lewis's absence. And Daniels had been working kind of the third safety in sub-package situation. He'd go back there with A.B. Elam, who will start in place of Lewis if Lewis can't go, and they move Barry up into that kind of linebacker-level role. So you wonder if base sets, maybe Daniels could go back to the outside corner. He's actually been the primary backup the past few years to Brandon Flowers. So that's interesting to watch. Travis Daniels, probably the most versatile player in this defensive backfield, at least as reserves go, can play both safety positions, nickel, dime, and the outside cornerback. And we did not see him this preseason in an outside cornerback role. In a game, we did in practices. So Travis, that's a good point. He could also be in there. If we look at the inside linebacker situation, Mitch, if Derek Johnson can't go, it's not something we've seen much in Kansas City. Derek Johnson, Javon Belcher, since 2010, go get them, guys. DJ was on the bench in 9.
In and out.
Yeah, they were.
He was on kickoff coverage against Pittsburgh.
So 2010, really, those two guys, at least in base sets, and DJ every play because he never leaves the game. Go ahead and get out there. So what happens behind them? It's another kind of poker face. You have two guys that can play both spots. Brandon Siler, who the Chiefs, for all intents and purposes, that they signed him last year. He missed the year with Achilles injury for this spot. In case one of their two guys went down, step in, be a starter. Now, he practiced all preseason and played all preseason on the other side behind Javon Belcher in kind of the thumper role. Corey Greenwood, who can play both sides, says he can. I think he's more of a weak side guy. I would be surprised to see him ever step into the strong side that Javon plays. But he says he can play both sides. He's been the primary backup to Derek Johnson throughout the preseason. Greenwood has been more of a special teams player throughout his career. So it would be interesting to see if DJ can't go, which one of those guys steps up and plays next to Javon Belcher.
Our answer is the same here, because we think it's going to be just a base. You sit there in the 3-4 base and, ooh, DJ can't go, so it's got to be Greenwood. I think it's a variety of answers. And there's no written law here that means you got to play an odd front. So you could actually end up showing some even front and do some two linebacker sets and do some things that way. Again, I just think the wheels are turning on the second floor of One Arrowhead Drive, knowing potentially they've got to deal with it.
Well,
but I think there is an error here to assume that, well, he's out, this guy's going to come in for him. I think there are complex answers to every one of these at all three levels, because there's issues basically, well, at the back middle level and back level.
Yeah, the wheels are turning. Well, wheels are turning for me late last night at the office going through a fantasy football draft, right? I walk out the door, but
I'm looking at the ceiling fan thinking they're going to be at the Atlanta
Falcons. Okay, yeah, while I'm doing important stuff in my last week, like fantasy football draft, last till 9:30, I'm walking out, though. Romeo Crennel's car is still in the parking lot. So the wheels are turning. He outlasted my draft last night here, which is what you want to see out of the head coach. We caught up with Brandon Seiler.
Fantasy football's fine, but there will be civilizations that will dig out, like archaeological digs, and go, God, they've spent so much time playing fantasy football. Anyway.
It's a good way to stay
connected. It's okay. Stay connected, that's right, and make a bunch of money or lose a bunch of money.
Wherever it goes. Brandon Seiler, we talked to him yesterday after practice about his progression through camp and what he plans to do to get ready for this weekend.
I mean, obviously you missed all the last season. What's it like getting back to real football now?
Shoot, I'm loving it, man. I'm loving it. I just like being back out there, trying to compete every day and give us a better chance to win games.
How are you feeling? You know, the ankle flared up right at the beginning of camp, and you were missing some practice. And since then, it seems like about a month's passed, and you've been out there every day.
Yeah, that kind of bummed me out at first, because it was like one of those setbacks that you have. But, you know, it's all better now, so I'm all good.
One of the things about you, when they signed you 2 years ago, they said they liked you because you could play both inside positions. In San Diego, did you play on both sides, or were you more just strong or weak?
I played both of them. Throughout the time that I was there, I did play both of them.
And how different are the two? You said they're different positions. How different are they, really, to learn if it's a quick week and you have to jump to the other side?
They're different, but not drastically. It's not like moving from outside to inside. They're both inside spots. So they're different. It's little stuff that changes, but not that much.
I think the biggest difference in the situation is the build of the players. Javon Belcher, you look at the way he's built. He's taking on fullbacks, sacrificing himself to blockers. He's the all-yoked-up guy, and Derek Johnson's the more athletic player that's able to free. And you look at Brandon Seiler, he's built more like Javon Belcher than Derek Johnson. However, Seiler does move around, and that was the one thing I wanted to see in camp, Mitch, is could he still move as quickly as he did last year with the Achilles injury? And he struggled a little bit with his movement early in camp, but I think he's kind of regained that game speed as the preseason went on.
Yeah, he missed some time, quite honestly. But, man, that is a very difficult injury to come back from. I mean, that is maybe the toughest, arguably, to try to continue to keep playing. But just to be honest, kind of the Mike and Will linebacker, that's the only two positions that really flip. And when the offense shows strong side, they'll go, whoop, whoop, and that's about it. You don't see an entire linebacker corps flip, where Atlanta will, because Sean Witherspoon in Missouri becomes a key guy in this game. They like to put him on that weak side position and bring him off the edge. But Seiler, that Mike backer, is closer to being a defensive lineman in size. The Will backer, the weak side backer, the Derek Johnson, Corey Greenwood, is more like a safety in size. And so it's not super easy just to slip over from Mike to Will. And you've got to play the open side. You've got to be able to turn your hips. You've got to be able to read and rush the passer, or you've got to be able to cover and handle screen passes a little bit more. So, it's a challenge.
And the other challenge in the run game, as we keep going down this list, the final guy, and hopefully just Tom Holley's missing out the defense this weekend, because these guys are all trying to get back, but it could be up to five based off the way the Chiefs started practicing. He's six if you count Jaleel Brown in there as well.
Alan Bailey's on there, too.
I didn't even mention Alan Bailey. That's a big guy in your sub-package situation. Mm-hmm. So let's look at the man in the middle, though. Anthony Turbio has been so good this preseason. injured his ankle and went into the locker room, did not return in the third preseason game against Seattle, mm-hmm. hasn't practiced since, is moving around better, and obviously they didn't put him on IR. They feel like he's going to come back at some point. If he can't go, Mitch, you have two nose tackles on this roster, the Poe brothers, P-O-E and P-O-W-E. Dontari Poe, and I don't, Romeo Cano hasn't tipped his hat here either. Jarrell Poe could very well draw the start, but it could be your first round pick making a start in the base defense and maybe even being kind of a quasi three down player when they go into sub package. People have been talking about this guy all the time. Oh, he's not working with the first team. He's not doing as much in the base defense. Well, here it is. He could possibly be what they draft him to be long-term, a three-down player against the Atlanta Falcons in his NFL regular season debut.
I gave the analogy of saying in swimming lessons they wanted him to take beginners and just ease him in to get him up to that intermediate stage. That ends with all these injuries. It's jumping into the deep end of the pool with the Atlanta Falcons opening week, base sub, in the gap, head up, pressure, play two gap. Don't let Turner, Michael Turner, run downhill in the middle, because that's a real problem if that starts to happen. Yep. And keep in mind, this Atlanta team was the only NFL team to have a 1,000-yard rusher, a 1,000-yard receiver in Roddy White, and the guy we know very well having a tight end that had 850 receiving yards. But if you look at Atlanta on the road, it's a very clear demarcation line. When Turner got going, they won. When he didn't, they lost. They were 4-4 on the road last year, and he can go school right down the line at Michael Turner. So this is a giant week for Dontari Poe. Ahead of schedule, but we've heard Romeo say it daily, almost daily, that when this happens, guys have to step up. And, hey, this might be a week Dontari Poe has got to work ahead of schedule on his growth and maturity curve.
Whoever it is, whether it's Corey Greenwood, Dontari Poe, Andy Studebaker, there's a number of guys who need to step up on this roster. And they hear it loud and clear. We talked to those three guys yesterday after practice.
How much of the work did you get since Derek wasn't doing much today?
A little bit. Yeah, I got in there a little bit. Javon was taking reps. Brandon was taking reps. So all I can do is get ready to play.
Yeah. Can you play both those spots, those inside spots?
Yeah. All three of us, we should all know both inside spots.
And, of course, usually you guys are the last to know who will actually play, right?
Exactly. So they keep that a secret. They got a good poker face. So all you can do is just get ready to play.
Obviously, they're a great team. They've done some big things in the last couple of years, and they've got a lot of great players. But, you know, so do we. And we've been working hard all camp. We've known that they were coming this entire time, and I think we're going to be prepared, and we'll be ready for them.
Andy, a sense of urgency out of practice today, knowing it's a regular season and all that kind of
thing? Yeah, it always picks up a little bit. I mean, now that they count, and the team's together here for the long haul, and that first practice is a chance for us. You know, we're focused solely on one team against Atlanta, and so we're getting a good idea of what they're doing. And anytime you can spend 2.5 hours on just one team, it's going to pick up a little bit.
Andy, what do you miss from Tamba outside of the pass rush ability? Maybe inside the huddle, inside the locker room, things like that that's missing this week.
I think anytime you miss somebody from your lineup due to anything, whether it's this or an injury or whatever, anytime you're missing a veteran leader, you know, you're just going to miss those type of leaders in the lineup. But this is no different than somebody getting hurt or being out for a quarter or whatever. And we'll miss them. But we gotta pick it up. We're gonna have to count on a lot of different guys and pull together as a team and just circle the wagons and just play hard.
It's gonna be a big challenge for us, but it's up to us to kind of step up to that challenge and play the best of our abilities.
And you got a couple guys kind of nicked up on mm-hmm. on the front line. How much more will that mean for you, do you think?
It just means more guys got to step up, myself included. That's a part of this game. You know, people get hurt, people get injured. You know, it's up to the people behind them to step up and make more plays.
So that's our defensive preview as the Chiefs get ready to take on Matt Ryan, Roddy White, Tony Gonzalez, Julio Jones, Michael Turner. The good news, Mitch, offensively, the Chiefs are healthy. It looks like they're going to be able to run out their full string of starters, their full line of guys, and the reserve skill positions as well. And it's interesting because people looked at this team going into the season, nationally, locally, and most people say, okay, potential for a top 10 defense. Offense has some weapons, improved, but defense should carry the offense, especially earlier in this year. And it looks like week one, it's going to be flipped if this injury situation stays the way it is. You could be looking at an offense carrying a defense and needing to score a lot of points on Sunday.
You hear the complimentary football term used a lot around One Arrowhead Drive, and that's going to be the case all year long. But in week one, I put it in italics in a real big font, because this may take a Green Bay type of effort in the way that the Chiefs were able to beat Green Bay last year. And it's what's interesting is last year Atlanta was a high time of possession team. They were one of the top teams in the league at hanging on to the football. People expect them to just chuck it downfield. They have not done that in the past. I mentioned their offensive line. All right, let's go to the Kansas City. Time of possession, moving the chains, being in favorable down and distances. Daboll preaches it every day, like you're in, you know, master's class here. And I think sometimes that's always the case. You're going, well, that's just obvious. Some games, though, it becomes more paramount. And I'm not so sure this week it's not a real big story.
I'm wondering what we haven't seen this preseason.
No,
Daboll showed a little bit of Charles and Hillis in the backfield at the same time. He showed a little bit of that. Not a whole lot, though. And I would imagine if I were an offensive coordinator, you can believe that there's probably a lot more packages he's got in store with those two guys. You know, we only saw a preview of how they're going to use Dexter McCluster. He looked great this preseason. I'd anticipate we probably see some stuff with Dex that we didn't see this preseason. I wouldn't say that Daboll was bland, Mitch, during the preseason, because that's not the way he is. He's an aggressive type of coach. But I definitely got the feeling when you step back and look that he held back in personnel packages and things. We saw the bread and butter, but we saw a lot of, okay, here's Jamal's turn to carry the football, 2-3 rushes. Here's Peyton Hillis, sub in, sub out. I think we're going to see some interesting sets in the backfield as well. Is McCluster getting in there? I just think that we're going to see a whole lot more this Sunday than we saw in the preseason at all.
Well, the last two preseason games, I think it got pretty bland. It wasn't like they were just shooting out a bunch of formations. The first 2 weeks, it was a little bit different. But the last two, and for sure the fourth one. But I hear shuffling of cards upstairs, and that's Daboll shuffling against his buddy, Mike Nolan. Again, the Atlanta Falcons make it the playoffs again, but they don't win a playoff game again. They blow out both coordinators. It's like Arthur Blank is kind of putting some pressure here on Mike Smith and this team, and Nolan comes in to be the defensive coordinator. Give Kevin Brebner credit, the Brebs man, our research analyst, Mr. Production, that knew
the free agent signing this offseason.
Key free agent
former
signing.
Practice squad player.
He's the Tyson Hartman of this team. He's surprised made the 53 as an undrafted free agent in Nebraska, I should say, Hartman at K-State. But let's go to the Nolan Daboll factor. Chess game. The shuffling of the cards. This is riverboat gambling, baby, and the chips are on the table. This will be one of the most fascinating parts of this game is the fact that two guys that are highly respected at their respective roles are going to be playing this big poker game in front of 75,000 fans.
Yeah, Daboll, Mike Nolan schemed with each other in Miami last year in practices throughout. You say the name Mike Nolan, and if B-Rad were on this show, he would probably pass out. And I don't blame him, because the Chiefs, Brad is scared to death of Mike Nolan, because the Chiefs historically against Mike Nolan defenses have not fared well. So to Brad, Mike Nolan's the best defensive coordinator who ever walked the face of the earth, just because every time.
Well, he's pretty good.
He is very good. But that's something to consider as well. And obviously, personnel changes, coaching changes. But Mike Nolan, his stops, he has had a lot of success against the Chiefs throughout his career.
Yeah, and Atlanta's made some interesting moves. They're spending a lot of money in their secondary. You got Dante Robinson. They traded for Asante Samuel. And Brett Grimes is their franchise guy. So that's three corners that are eating up a chunk of change. At linebacker, they decided not to pay Curtis Lofton. Not only does he leave the Falcons as their leading tackler and their best guy in the middle, he goes to the New Orleans Saints. So he goes in the division, which means it puts a lot of pressure on the interior of that Atlanta defense. Now, again, Mike Nolan's going to dial up some stuff. I mean, the chips are on the table and the cards are being shuffled. But one of the things he likes to dial up, this becomes about Mizzou now, quite honestly, because Mizzou's got maybe two of the biggest players in this game if the Chiefs are going to beat the Falcons. One is Sean Witherspoon, who's great on the open side, can pressure the quarterback, a fabulous athlete, first-round pick. Will Moore at safety, and we've seen Nolan use safeties in the past to great effectiveness, and Moore's an athlete, and he can do some different things in both coverage and pressure. So Mizzou, on the other side of this game, has got a big part of this game for Nolan and Atlanta's approach.
Let's close the show in the final 10 minutes or so, Mitch, with just some predictions of where, not necessarily wins or losses, but more offensive predictions, starting with Peyton Hillis, Jamaal Charles. Let's get your prediction on who gets the bigger workload, catches, receptions, carries. How do you see them doing? Is this a 50-50 split we're going to see? Is it the hot hand? How do you see this whole thing playing out in this Sunday's game?
I think it's opponent-specific. I think it's going to flip-flop back and forth. Does it end up 50-50 when we're looking at this at the end of December and hopefully with a playoff bid and division title? Probably. But I think that 50-50 is going to move up and down based on who they play, the strengths and weaknesses of the opponent, and where the Chiefs can exploit every opponent weekly, because that's what Brian Daboll likes to do. That's on his business card. He's great at it, at finding the mismatch and going after it. So to answer your question, sometimes it'll be Hillis. Sometimes it'll be Charles. Sometimes it could be the third down back who comes into play.
Well, that was my next question. Do we see either of those guys on third down? I would think Jamaal would probably take some third downs off, but you want to keep him on the field. Peyton can block well, but then you've got guys that you draft for that position. Cyrus Gray, who, if he's healthy, could be your third down player, led the AFC in rushing after preseason week one. And then, obviously, Sean Drone's another option. And Nate Eaches, if he ends up being active for this game, will be mainly a special teams guy. But you know what? He was kind of a grinder this preseason as well. Third down, how does that fit into this mix?
Well, I mean, Jamaal's built to be kind of a third down back. He can pass block. He's good at it. Right. He's taken pride in it ever since his first day in the league. He can catch screens, he can catch the ball out of the backfield, and he becomes a giant weapon if you do that. So it's not like you're void there. The other thing with Peyton Hillis, and we've seen him be able to catch the football. Remember, 331 touches in 2010 with Cleveland. That's a gob, including 61 catches. So it's
under Brian Daboll in Cleveland.
There you go. So, but he can. It's not like he comes out on third down and you're going, oh, it's Natron Means. I mean, there's
right.
So he's got the ability to do that. And if Drone is up, he's going to probably be up for special teams, but we've seen him have some capabilities. But I think early on, until Cyrus Gray gets into that role, then I think he will morph into that role very well, because we saw signs of it in that Arizona game. But it certainly can be handled by Charles and Hillis if they are going to be in there in a third down, three wide, one tight, one back situation.
Wide receiver situation, Dwayne Bowe will be fully back. John Baldwin, Steve Breston. There's your three primary. Then you've got some slots in McCluster, who's going to get a lot in there, and who knows if Wiley sees some action as well. Interesting to me, Mitch, how the top three kind of mix and match, because last year when Baldwin came back, it was Breston, Bowe. This is the big misconception among a lot of Chiefs fans, that Breston just shoved into the slot. It was Breston and Bowe outside, and John Baldwin kind of lined up inside, and some of those are you can cross in motion, but that was generally the setup. I think John Baldwin now is kind of established himself as an outside receiver on this roster. Breston continued to work on the outside some during the preseason, and we saw Bowe kind of go into that slot role when they want those three outside guys and motion around and try mismatches. How do you see these three guys working in together, and really who are your outside receivers on Sunday?
Well, it goes back to the chemistry factor, because what I've been able to pick up and sense since Bowe joined the team, that there's no issues there. It's not Baldwin going, are you going to get my catches and yards? No, there's none of that. Now, again, it becomes opponent specific. The best thing about the Green Bay game, other than defending the run, which was key, was the fact that all three of those guys, Bowe, Breston, and Baldwin, got their top catches in the preseason in that game. All got double-digit receptions early in the game. Real good sign, good sign. The other thing is Atlanta does not have big corners. It's not like that 6'4 dude that Seattle's got, the young guy, the Oregon State guy that's like gigantic. These guys are smaller corners, and that's just the way that Mike Smith has built his defense. But Brett Grimes is not a big physical corner. Asante Samuel has never been a big physical corner. And even in Dante Robinson, it's you know, he's more finesse than being physical. So if you want to look at a matchup in this game, the Chiefs are putting two of the most physical wide receivers in the National Football League on the edges against guys that aren't necessarily that physical. What has changed with this team in for maybe forever with this group is the comma factor. And you'll hear me say it on the radio play-by-play because you've got Bo, comma, Breston, comma, Baldwin, comma, Wiley, comma, McCluster, comma. We haven't talked about the tight ends at all. I mean, Gonzalez is a huge weapon for Atlanta. We all know that. He's going to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. But the Chiefs, for the first time since Gonzalez left, have a complement of guys that, as a group, can kind of do what Tony does. Because we mentioned that, too. They're not Gonzalez, probably not Hall of Fame tight ends, but as a group, they do provide a multiplicity of weapons. So there's three more commas to put in there. I'm going to put Maneri in that group. So all of a sudden now Atlanta's got some issues. It's not less we're going to pin the heels. You got two guys to defend. We're going to spy Charles, and we're going to take away Bo. Now what are you going to do? Well, those days right now are over. Kansas City can do a lot more things now to defenses than they have maybe since the late 90s.
How many points does it take to win on Sunday for the Chiefs?
Ooh, I hope it's not over 20 because you can't get into a 35-31 game in this, my opinion. It's 24-21 Chiefs.
Okay.
So suck up kicks a field goal, 46 yards, right hash, right to left, just curls inside the left upright, celebrate, Mr. Irrelevant walks off the field, and Chiefs win.
I think it's going to take over 30 points for the Chiefs to win because I don't think that's going to be the key throughout this year. I think you have guys banged up and this offense that Atlanta has, I think the Chiefs can do it because I like their matchups offensively. I do think that the team's going to have to score some points, which I would say then, Mitch, how does this team stop the red zone woes? Last year, red zone, 32nd in the league, struggled so much in the red zone last season. An emphasis all through OTAs. Brian Daboll said that this team was bad in the red zone. We've got to fix it. OTAs, they go after it. Preseason, they go after it. Training camp, they go after it. We just saw the other night against Green Bay. Chiefs ones play right with the Packers ones. Right with them, offensively, defensively. What happens? Stall out in the red zone.
Yeah.
And that's the thing to me. If you want to talk about matchups individually, team matchups, the thing that the Chiefs can't have happen this weekend is stall out when they get inside the 20. They have to capitalize on those opportunities because I think Atlanta is going to score some points in this ball game. How do the Chiefs go about making sure they have red zone success?
Well, if Daboll has held a hold card, I think it's some of the stuff he's going to do in the red zone because he knows that they've got to do something differently there. But you and I have talked about it before. Because the vertical game squashes down in the red zone, you've got to be good laterally. Meaning if you can attack 53 yards of the field, the width of the field, with different guys doing different things, and you can still get matchup issues down in the red zone. And then there's times you just got to line up and hit people and get them in there, which Hillis gives them that chance, or Hillis blocking for Charles gives them that chance, or they go to some kind of big package. But still, they have better weapons now. It wasn't great in the preseason. It was okay, but it wasn't great. But it was better. You've got to be able to attack all 53 yards width of the field in the red zone.
Got my my buzz here, an email from Jeremy Slavens, Director of Special Events, giving me the lowdown on Red Friday. Some of you have asked about Red Friday. You will be on the Power and Light stage, what, about 6:30 to 7:30? Is that
right
6
in
to
there,
7,
yeah.
Around 5:30? I think drink specials start downtown this Friday night, Kansas City Power and Light around 5. Get down there. It's going to be fun. Chiefs cheerleaders, Mitch, players. I believe Scott Pioli will be there. Shauna Hill will MC it with you, our host of Red and Gold. It's a lot of fun. Always a lot of fun at the Red Friday kickoff party downtown. Lots of stuff going on, though, and it looks like they're going to be sending out the release that we'll put on KCChiefs.com later on today. Stuff going on all across the city from logos painted in iconic locations, buildings going red, fountains on the plaza. Red Friday magazines, once again, $2 suggested donation. If you're in Kansas City, it's going to be all over the street corners. It benefits Big Brothers Big Sisters. So $2, get a little fun preview for Red Friday. Support a good cause. I see here smoke planes painting the town red on rush hour trips down 70 and 35. So don't worry, Agent Orange isn't going to be falling from the sky. They're painting the sky red around kids.
We're going to new levels, man. This is new levels of Red Friday, but it's honestly one of my favorite days of the year because NFL teams across the globe, the country, try to replicate Red Friday. Everybody sees it, and they go, ooh, this would be kind of cool just to turn the region on. And we have people that watch us online from the United Kingdom to Canada to Belize to Colombia. Make your community Red Friday. Everybody you want to, I want to see somebody in Saskatoon go Red Friday and just go nuts. We got a Canadian. We got Corey Grimmett. Come on, bring it. But I love it because this town and even the region, the communities, Topeka and Wichita and St. Joe and Omaha and Lincoln, they'll have Red Friday activities as well. And I just it's giving me chills to think that a whole region and a whole franchise can treat it like it's the fifth hour pep rally in high school, and I think it's awesome.
20th year, I believe, it is here for Red Friday and the tradition in Kansas City. Again, later this afternoon on kcchiefs.com, a full rundown of events if you live in the area. If you don't, log on to kcchiefs.com. Of course, we'll have video recap, probably some social media recaps. Lots of fun going on as football is back in Kansas City this Sunday. Chiefs have some injury issues going into it. They've got some offensive playmakers going into it. It's going to be an interesting ball game, Mitch. It's also a great weekend for football in the area. Missouri has Georgia coming to town Saturday in Columbia.
K-State's got Miami.
Football fans, look, you had the kind of the preseason for Chiefs last week. Some of the preseason for the school I first signed with, Missouri State, going and getting hammered by K-State. Charlie Weiss getting...
It's 9-9 in the third quarter, though.
Getting his, it was 9-9 in the third quarter. Charlie Weiss getting his first win against a 1AA squad in Missouri, putting the throttle on. So the local teams had their kind of preseason kick. Yeah. The Chiefs had their preseason. Regular season football starts all around the area. On Friday, I'm going to say, Red Friday, have fun watching your favorite team.
I'm going all bobbleheads, baby.
But don't
best wishes to you in Indianapolis.
Don't stay out too late. It's going to be tailgating.
This needs mojo from every one of these bobbleheads.
I'll be watching from Indianapolis. It's going to be a lot of fun. Of course, I'll be at the game cover. Look, I put in too much work this offseason to bow out before the game. I'm not leaving myself. I kind of extended myself, Mitch. I'm not leaving myself much room to get my life in order because on the Monday after the Chiefs' victory over Atlanta, I'm flying out to Indianapolis to find a place to live and then start a week after that. So I wasn't going to miss at least one. We're going to go 1-0. I've done too much work on this team to not see one game that counts. So as is, kcchiefs.com through Sunday. Then next week, Chiefs Live. We're going to narrow it down to 30 minutes until they figure out what they're doing with my replacement. But it's going to be you. Maybe they'll bring in B-Rad. Chiefs Live, same time slot, Tuesday at noon next week. Mitch Holthus switching around. We'll even put you on the left side. Our
yeah, I
want
to
right,
be over there.
Get in this chair, the captain's seat.
Close to the Emmy.
And who knows if maybe Kevin Brebner can sit beside you, our top producer, and break down how Brian Daboll carved up Mike Nolan since he was with both of them last year.
Yeah, he stays. He's the nugget master. You always need a nugget master, and Brebs is the nugget master. He will also be the outbreak monkey from camp. That's another matter. But I like Nugget Master better.
Thanks to you, Mitch. Thanks to all my guys at 65 TPT. It's tough to leave them. They've been so supportive of me, helping my career grow. And obviously, thanks to all of you. There would be none of this for Mitch, for me, for 65 TPT, for the Chiefs, if people didn't watch and people didn't interact and people didn't follow. I can tell you the evolution of what we're doing online and our broadcast from the preseason games coming in-house to everything, the new TV shows that are coming out this year. The evolution's only beginning for 65 TPT, and I'm going to be excited to watch and follow, just like all of you are, from a distance. So
let's be honest. We've gone from the bottom of the league in this. The bottom.
This show started off me talking to a camera in a PR closet where I just threw up a banner. No B-roll, no anything, just me having my sheet of paper and going, this is what's going on with the Chiefs. No co-host. No anything, one shot, 1 hour, talking straight to a camera.
But of all the shows production. And all the production and all the emphasis is put on, we've gone from being the worst of the league to the best. We've gone from being Wayne's World to actually putting on a political convention at this spot. So it has been a big investment. A lot of people, you mentioned the 65 TPT crew, Rob Alberino is a magician. But the fact is the Chiefs have gone from the bottom to the top when it comes to these kind of shows.
And don't forget about the Hunt family. It takes investment, financial investment to do this. A lot of great cameras, a lot of great people. Are really, it was myself and a cameraman 3 years ago. Now we've got a team of 10, 15 people doing things. Besides what the Hunts have done with the team and Arrowhead, they've done a lot of investing internally to how they market their team.
And so Mark Donovan, the president, gets it too. He gets Absolutely. It. He gets it. And so he has to make those investments as well and make it happen. But, dude, you were with Garth going to Stan Mikita's Donuts. It was it was Wayne's World. And It's a lot better now. When you think about Chiefs Kingdom and Hy-Vee Chiefs Insider and the Red and Gold Show and all the features that every day we're feeding them the insatiable appetite of Chiefs fans. It's feed the monster, but this is a fun monster to feed.
And speaking of it, one more thing to check your local listings for, and it'll also be on KCChiefs.com. My last TV special alongside Mitch, Full Contact, getting you ready for week one. You'll still have the pregame show on Chiefs Insider. This is a special 30-minute episode we taped last week, and it's going to air this week. Really great job. If you watched Chiefs Blueprint and liked it, it's headed up by Kevin Brebner and Adam Pellegrino. They did a great job with our training camp preview. This is the training camp exit. It'll also be kind of my exit out as far as a TV broadcast goes. So check
but don't
out.
Miss Matt Cassel in that show.
Hilarious.
That's going to make the show. TiVo it if you can't.
We had Matt open up. I'll just give him the preview because they want to see. Everyone laughs about Matt and the third preseason game just biting it on the touchdown celebration. It was like not top 10. Guys killed him in the locker room. Fans killed him on Twitter. We just have to explain it. What were you doing, man? So in Full Contact, Matt's going to take you step-by-step through his failed touchdown celebration with Dexter McCluskey.
And his adjustments for the future.
And his adjustments for the future, how that will not happen. So keep an eye out. Thanks again to everybody. And Mitch, we'll see you next week on Chiefs Live, brought to you by your Midwest Ford dealers.